As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
The Phil Hayes Show.
Hello, welcome to the show, The Phil Hayes Show, brought to you by The Athletic and The Square Ball. Dan Moylan here from The Square Ball with Michael Normanson from The Square Ball and Phil Hayes. From The Athletic, his name on the show, of course. Back end of the week show as we preview the Newcastle game towards the back end of this show as well. In the meantime, if you want to read Phil's previews of that and the pre-match and post-match chat as well, theathletic.com/Leeds pod to sign up and read everything that Phil's written about Leeds. And there's plenty more from the football world and the sports world too. Have a look at that. theathletic.com/Leeds pod. Phil, hello. We're recording on Thursday ahead of any press conferences this time.
This afternoon, yes. Big Sam will be up, yes.
Have you found him so far? How's he got on?
Interesting, really, yeah. I think he said that first press conference for them I found slightly odd. Second one before Manchester City drilled down much more into the detail of what he was going to do and I think started to make a lot more sense when it came to what his approach was going to be. I thought the tone after Manchester City was about right as well. I don't think he was pretending that they necessarily deserved anything from the game, but I think he was pleased that they at least gave themselves a chance of taking something from it towards the end. And I think he was pleased as well that the kind of walkover in the first half wasn't quite repeated in the second as well. But you could tell from his comments that he never really had the Manchester City game down as one that was going to deliver any points from him. It's these three that he'll be going after. And I think he'll know that this is a mega, mega week for him because it is starting to get to absolute crunch time now, isn't it? I think they need something against Newcastle, don't you?
While we're having a little chat about where we are, the current state of play, I just need to address the important issue, as we always do on these shows, and that's digging each other out for things we've said that are wrong.
Oh, yes.
So on the Monday Club, which is over on the Square Ball feed, Everton can't score was your general thrust and they look done for.
Yes.
Leicester look better placed to survive. They've got the tools to survive. Words to that effect. I am paraphrasing, Phil.
Yes. Not far off, I don't think. I think that's pretty much what I did say.
And what were the scores?
Actually based on one trip to the King Power Stadium for a relegation slog.
And let me, spoiler alert, listener, what yes. happened later that night?
Goals everywhere. I still think Leicester will stay up for what it's worth. But yeah, it's almost past the point of predicting. The Brighton game was just weird, wasn't it? I don't know what Brighton were doing. They've had such a good season and they've been so consistent and so reliable in the way that they play and in the way that they set up and seemed to walk into every single trap that Everton were setting for them. And I can't deny that as I was watching the goals go in, I was sitting thinking, I've just been on the podcast this morning saying Everton are in trouble because they've got no goals in them and they don't look like they can win any games. I mean, Leicester losing at Fulham was a good result for Leeds. The two results after that were an abomination, really. Everton winning at Brighton in particular. I fancied Forest to beat Southampton in the spirit of the game we've just played. I do believe you said to me that Southampton would get something at Forest, which they very nearly did in that scramble of injury time. But I think it was a deserved Forest win. I suppose if nothing else, it makes the point now that Leeds are going to have to win somewhere, aren't they? They're going to have to win one of these games. They're not going to stay up by scraping a couple of points, one at West Ham, say one at home to Spurs. They're going to have to beat somebody in this run of three games. And I don't know, is it going to take at least 4 points? Probably is, isn't it?
I'm just glad that my terminally miserable point of view has proved mainly to be correct for the last two seasons, because it's been an easy win, really.
Forget optimism. It's all about being right.
Exactly.
Normanton leather in the bookies all over the place, yeah.
But I don't know. It might still be three that does it. I don't know. And we're just into wild speculative territory, aren't we, here, really? I mean, I look at Leicester's fixtures, though. I'm interested to know why you think they'll stay up when they've got Liverpool at home, Newcastle away, and then West Ham at home. Are you pinning it on that final day for them?
I suspect so. I don't know what it is about Leicester. I'm kind of amazed that they're in the trouble they're in, not because they're an exceptionally good squad or exceptionally good side, but they do seem to have enough players in that team to construct something that would not be 18th in the table, which is maybe not true of some of the other teams around them. But that was a shock from Everton on Monday. I was not anticipating that at all. This is the thing, you see, we've done a kind of round table relegation piece for Friday on The Athletic, and it's a bunch of questions thrown at all of us who are involved, or at least the four clubs who are properly involved now. So Forest, Everton, Leicester and Leeds. We've decided that Southampton have gone, and we've decided that West Ham are out of it, which I think they are. And one of the questions was reasons for optimism, and it's very hard not to look through the fixture list that other clubs have and think to yourself, well, probably not going to be a lot of points coming back from that either. Everybody seems to have it difficult at this point. So you're right. I mean, you're saying there, maybe 33 will keep you up. Possibly it will. But it's become the ultimate straw clutching game this now, hasn't it? Nobody has a clue who's going to deliver what. And that Everton result at Brighton was probably like your kind of textbook result that comes at this time of year, where it looks to all the world like that'll be a home win for Brighton, and they get absolutely smashed from nowhere.
Do you see Everton getting anything from Man City at home and Wolves away?
Should I answer this?
Yes.
Should I?
Just say yes, Phil.
Yeah, I think they'll beat City and get a point at Wolves.
What led you to that conclusion, Phil?
Yeah, it's like the broken clock routine, isn't it? Like, you know, they try and score right. They will surely lose to City. I mean, they surely will lose that game. Wolves, I could see them getting something from. Yeah, Wolves have been decent but not brilliant this season. Pretty hot and cold. They'll probably feel like they've got the bit between their teeth after that result at Brighton. But even so, massively, massively up and down Everton, and mostly down for a lot of the season. So I don't think even on the basis of that result, I'm rushing to back them to stay up. But that's the point, isn't it? Nobody in this really knows. Like, nobody has a clue. I saw Adam Crafton at our place tweet on, I think it was on Monday, saying, why not just relegate five teams? They're all hopeless. Like, they're all absolutely rubbish. They've all, you know, they've all kind of asked for this in their own separate ways. Why not just get rid of all of them? And that's kind of how it feels, really. One of the questions, and you know, this, we had a discussion about this previously as well, but one of the questions in this round table piece was, does your club deserve to go down if they do? To which everybody's just said, well, yeah, you know, absolutely.
That is one of the funny things, isn't it? Like, you look at it, and we obviously dig into the clips you do, especially, Michael, for assembling propaganda, and that's the common thread that runs through all these fan channels. All the fans go, well, we deserve to go down.
Yeah.
All of them think.
And at various points, everyone has said we are down. Like West Ham, who now look absolutely clear. Bournemouth, who now are clear.
Yeah.
At various points this year, they've gone like, we're gone here. We need to start thinking about next year. We need to start
clearing out.
Look at who's going to be here next year, who's not. And actually think, well, it's a bit premature. And it's premature for us to start thinking that now. But equally, you can't help but look ahead, can you, and go, right, well, who's going to be manager next year? Who's going to be, you go, well, Melier's going, Adam's probably going. You start chalking up all, you kind of start piecing together a first day of the season 11, don't you, already, for next year?
You and I are probably opposite sides of the same coin in that regard, in that I'd refuse to give up on them just because, well, if you give up on them, then I know it's easier, isn't it, to accept your fate. And in many ways, I have accepted our fate. But there is that part of you, and there's that part of everybody, no matter how much you might deny it, that thinks we could still get out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I've got like Heinz Varieties 57 versions from Moylan of we're staying up. WhatsApp messages is over the course of about 3 months. But then I sway back and forward with that as well. And I think what happens is, and I've seen this loads of times over the years, it's not isolated results, because obviously if you're in relegation battle, or if you're going for promotion or trophies or whatever else, then your form tends to be consistent one way or the other. But there tend to be isolated results which make you feel as if it's the point of no return. So to take Leeds at Bournemouth as an example, you get battered down there, the body language is as it is, the general mood around the club is as it is, you start to think that Gracia is probably toast, they're going to try and replace him, what can they actually do with four games to go? And you say to yourself, that's that. And it tends to start around about February. You know, it tends to start around about February that a team or a club will have a bad result, a couple of bad results, and people will say, ah, oh, we're down, because you feel as if the trend is starting to be set. But what you always forget is that there are other clubs round about you who are equally dreadful or equally unreliable. And sometimes the table can sit still for ages, as it has with Leeds. I mean, my wife doesn't really follow football much, which is kind of weird, given that it's kind of all that's going on around me in the house. But she sort of said to me, the thing is, if they're not winning any games, the games will run out eventually. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, that's actually how simple it is now. You know, it's not like this is going to go on until October with us going, yeah, it's still only 2 points. So there is going to come a point at which somebody is going to draw the line between 17th and 18th. But it's still ridiculously tight. And as I say, I'm not really looking at anybody's fixture list and saying, well, that's a bit of a gimme for them. You know, Forest have probably had their game, which is against Southampton, and they've made the most of that, which they needed to. But it doesn't get simple for them now. I don't think it looks easy for Leicester. I don't think it looks particularly easy for Everton. Definitely, definitely isn't easy for Leeds. So how are you calling it? And this is what I mean. You have moments where all faith is gone, isn't it? Because you sit and you look at what's in front of your eyes and you think, if this is it now, if this is what we are, then, and if this is how we play, and I guess that was the consideration when it came to sacking Gracia. You know, if this is going to be Leeds for the last four games, then there's simply no possibility of them adding any points to the total. But actually, as I say, I was sitting on Monday saying, oh, I think Leicester will get out of this. And people look at the table and say, Leicester aren't getting out of this, are they?
We did get a tweet to the effect of, Phil Hay basically knows nothing, does he?
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
Have you found yourself, Michael, like, do people try and talk to you about football and do you allow it to happen now? Like, people, like I'm thinking like predominantly family members, because Phil mentioned his wife there. Like, my wife, you know, she knows a lot about football, but obviously she's not invested in it to the same level, that ridiculous level that I am. I've got to a point now where they do try and engage me with it. Oh, they'll ask me a Leeds going down and I just have to stop them talking to me.
My wife never speaks to me about it.
Does she know better?
Never, not at all. She'll occasionally go, that wasn't very good, was it? And I'll go, nope. And that'll be the end of it.
I understand.
And I prefer to keep it as brief as that. I don't need to.
Yeah, my dad will say to me from time to time, could do with some points, couldn't they? I'll say, well, yeah, that's the name of the game.
She'll sometimes say, saw the result when I come in. And I'll go, yeah.
Next.
Yeah, not good, is it? Nah.
Nah, you're in the bottom three now, aren't you? Yeah.
It sometimes quite helps when you get in that your kids just want to watch Strictly or Glow Up or that sort of thing and just kind of ignore you completely.
How do you experience this then, Phil? Because, you know, it's well established you're a Hearts fan, but you've been covering Leeds for a long time now. And you like consistently refer to Leeds as we when we chat.
Yeah, I think more because I write about them. So yeah, They're kind of your club to cover professionally. But it's all that's around you all the time, you know. So I go to this kickboxing club with other Leeds fans there. So all they're saying to me at the moment is, it's not looking great, this, is it? You know, there's kind of no aspect of your life where you don't get engaged to some extent in some chat about Leeds. And it does make a difference for you professionally writing about the Premier League or writing about the Championship. You know, we had a long stretch in the Championship. A lot of grounds there, a lot of clubs that we've been to 100 times. There's not a whole lot more to discover down there. There is this view that it would be more interesting and potentially more entertaining down there because at least it's a slightly more open field. Although I do think that the dominance of your relegated clubs more and more in the Championship, it runs the risk of that turning into similar type of competition to the Premier League on a smaller scale. But without a doubt, I think it, you know, there probably is more of a competitive edge down in the Championship, but it's much better covering games against Manchester City and Chelsea and Man United, Liverpool, Tottenham, because of the players who are on the pitch. And
I thought you were going to say the press food.
Well, that as well, but I'm not really allowed to say that, am I? But you also have it in your head that if Leeds develop and make progress and become a good team, grow into a good team, then equally, better and better footballers that you get to write about, better and better footballers that you get to cover. And I think in your working environment, if the supporters are happy, you know, your work's happier, isn't it?
Yeah. Just talking about your working environment, we are in a shared office building just off Gelded Road, and there's a Middlesbrough fan, isn't there, in the office opposite. And obviously they're quite chipper at the minute because they've made the playoffs. He tries to engage us in football chat when we've got a shared kitchen area here. Tries to engage us in football chat, and I've just had to say to him, not now.
You need to set up like CCTV in there, don't you? So you can see that the coast clear before you
start having to piss in a bucket in. Just to avoid small talk. I don't want to talk about Leeds any more than necessary.
I think we all got fairly used to Leeds being a shambles in a basket case from like 2004 onwards. Well, earlier than that, But then you had the Bielsa era, which actually gave you the feeling of what it's like to cover a club who are competent and better than competent, you know, like exceptional
getting
football
it right,
team.
Getting it
fantastic,
right.
Fantastic, yeah, you know. The stories that it generates and what it gives you to cover and the satisfaction that everybody takes from it is absolutely wonderful. And I know the story at Newcastle is totally different, but I can't ever help thinking back when Newcastle come up to the game they had at Elland Road in January, Bielsa's last January, which I still think was a really, really pivotal moment in everything that happened, because it was there to be won for Leeds, deserved to win the game, lost the game in one of those kind of weird fashions where you weren't quite sure how it had happened. And the trajectory since then, helped obviously by what's gone on at Newcastle financially, have been quite extraordinary to look at. The way in which Newcastle were trailing miles behind in the league, even behind Leeds, who were not in a good league position, and are now trying to wrap up top four finish, you know, could finish third this season. They really have gone in opposite directions. So up in Newcastle, I used to see tweets from people saying, during the Bielsa era, when they had Steve Bruce and they had Mike Ashley, saying, I like what's going on down at Leeds. You know, I like what they've got. Why can't we have some of that? But then suddenly they're experiencing this massive, massive exponential climb, which is what you want, isn't it? It's what you want from football. It's what you want to write about. It's what you want to cover. And I do think that, you know, the frustration that's built in Leeds is in no small part down to the exceptional platform that they seem to have in 2021, which has just gone.
We were discussing on our show how that game against Newcastle, I know it was January, wasn't it, you're saying, but doesn't it feel like it could have been 5 or 6 years ago?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
All that's gone on since.
Yeah, the thing that you made me feel really sad with, Michael, was pointing out that if we'd won that game, we'd have been on 25 points, Newcastle would have been on 12.
Yeah.
And look at how it went.
And add up the points that the clubs have gathered since that point.
I don't want
and
to.
No, you don't. And it's, but, you know, it's not, that's not purely down to incompetence at Leeds or poor performance at Leeds. It's also down to the money that Newcastle have spent. And I know this debate goes on about how much they've spent and everything else. And it's not as if it's at the same level as City or anything else, but it's made a huge difference to them. It clearly has.
But it's been well targeted as well.
And
I remember banging the drum for, speaking of targets, like Matt Target, for example, mm-hmm. was a signing that Newcastle picked up for about the same money that we got Junior Firpo.
Yeah.
And with not just the aid of hindsight, because I was saying it at the time, had Leeds invested more sensibly, then maybe we would have followed a different trajectory than the one we have done.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie Howe was a bright appointment. I thought they didn't try to go Hollywood immediately by saying, because obviously Newcastle at that point were not going to be able to get your absolute top bracket of manager, but somebody like Mourinho, whose star had fallen, you know, if you were a kind of egotistical board that was thinking, oh, you know, we want to be noticed, could easily have said, right, let's just punt on him, let's go for that, let's get a few headlines. But Howe was a fairly clever appointment, I think. They seem to have scored pretty well on most of the signings that they've made. They've had the money to do it, and that does make a difference. But yeah, you're right. It does seem like 10 years ago that Newcastle game. And we did a long read on Monday about how it is that Leeds have gone from Bielsa to Allardyce, from this position where everything just seemed to be working to this position where nothing seems to be working. And, you know, writing the piece and reflecting on the fact that it's only like 15 months since Bielsa left, it does seem like another lifetime.
To go on to Newcastle and how they've done this, part of the story around them and the time of that game was, fair enough, this money's kind of on the way for them, but they don't have a structure in place, they don't have proper director of football set up, they don't have all this stuff. And yet, in the 15 months since, they seem to have bought really well. How has that happened? And how have we done so badly, given we had Victor Orta, who was meant to be this weapons grade contact book and his great algorithms and whatnot?
Well, they do have a director of football. They've got Dan Ashworth, who came from Brighton, and it took some time for them to get him. But clearly, looking at Brighton, there's been a really good recruitment structure there, which Ashworth was involved in. So that, again, was a pretty sensible appointment. I think what they got right was that they realised that the persistence with Bruce was making the place very, very toxic. And also, they almost dismissed out of hand at the start the argument that came from Bruce from time to time, or seemed to come from him. You kind of got this vibe in his comments that nobody could really do any better with the players who are here. This is the best that you can expect, because, you know, we don't have the resources, we don't recruit enough, we don't have a good enough squad to be able to compete more strongly. But how can I change the perspective of that? And then they made a couple of signings towards the end of the January window that just worked. You know, they just worked. They were the right deals to do. They paid off in the way that they needed them to. And once they started to get some impetus, they got into their heads that they were going to be safe, and they were. But they do have a pretty decent structure up there. Ashworth, I think's fairly credible. Director of football, seems to know what he's doing, as prior experience of the division as well, and was previously at the FA. And how, you know, I know it went wrong for him in the end at Bournemouth, but we talk quite a lot about cycles. You know, Bielsa and others, Radrizzani at the moment, talking about cycles. That was how it felt at Bournemouth, that there was only... It went on for a long time with Howe, and it went very, very well, but it couldn't last forever. I don't think it changed the fact that he was a very good coach, and I think they've got it right in appointing him.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
You dropped the B-bomb a few times there in part one, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
We probably should address this, even though the whole concept of it, I don't know why, just makes my heart sink just a tiny, tiny bit. Marcelo Bielsa returning to Leeds. There's been a rumour gurgling round on Twitter this week. Is there anything in this? Are there any legs to it? Because he's not quite Uruguay manager there, but he seems destined for it.
The Uruguay job's been on the table for a while. And from what I can gather with Bielsa, he likes the idea of it and seems pretty sold on it, but to this point hasn't actually committed to it. And I saw another report from the press in Uruguay or down in South America on Wednesday saying that they were expecting him to sign this week, but that's not the first time that that's been written, and it's not the first time that that's been written and then it hasn't happened. You know, it does seem as if he's kind of not rushing into that, which I guess is Bielsa. You know, that was the same at Leeds and with other jobs as well. It's never a case of grab the offer as soon as it drops through the letterbox. So we know that that's on the table. We also know that he would like to come back to England. You know, he would like a club job. He would like a Premier League job, which is why there were the talks with Bournemouth back in November, talks with Everton in January as well, neither of which came to anything. But it isn't a secret amongst those who are relatively close to him, people around him, that he would, you know, he enjoyed managing in England. He would come back here. He would like to have a club job. But in terms of Leeds, I haven't been told that that's on the cards. It seems, until that was to grow legs, it seems pointless discussing it, because all that's going to happen is the spawn of like a million blog posts saying this is what
Phil Hay refuses to rule out.
This is what he said on his podcast, and the honest answer is I don't know.
Could you see it as something that might ever happen? And then this is the reason why it kind of made my heart sink, is because we've all got such an emotional attachment to that time, and there almost seems to be a kind of a take me back kind of feeling to it, like things have gone so badly, I'm a mess without you, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, it's really difficult to know what anybody is thinking at the moment, anybody inside the club is thinking about, I guess, what happens next. And part of the reason for that is that nobody is certain yet what happens next in terms of Premier League status. Do Leeds stay up? Do they go down? Only 2 weeks until we find out. As we've spoken about many...
Thank God.
Well, isn't it just... I did say that in the relegation or the round table, reasons to be optimistic. I said, there's only 2 weeks to go. One way or the other, this will be done in a fortnight's time. But we've spoken a lot about the implications for the takeover and the fact that if Leeds stay up, we'd expect the 49ers to take control by July the 1st. If Leeds go down, all bets are off. Nobody is... There's no deal in place. Nobody can say at this stage whether Radrizzani stays with majority stake and tries to get them promoted at first or I guess second attempt, but it'd have to happen quickly, or whether the 49ers try and construct a deal, different deal, that means that they take either majority control in the championship or complete control in the championship.
Is there a desire within the investment group to perhaps pursue that line? And is it more dependent on Radrizzani being a willing seller?
Yeah, I think so. I think there is, although I don't think it would be right to say that every single investor in the group that the 49ers Enterprises have put together I mean, I can't speak for them, but I would be surprised if all of them would want to stay in the mix for a club who have been in the EFL. But of course, club in the EFL aren't going to cost as much as a club who are in the Premier League. So the investment that you need is smaller. The amount of money you need to pull together to do that deal isn't quite at the same level.
We should stress, so, I was going to say, Phil, sorry, just to stress that there is a clause in the deal now that sees the deal get called off if we go down.
Yeah, no, the deal that has been in place for Radrizzani to sell Leeds as a going concern in the Premier League will not exist if the club get relegated, no. And up to this point, as far as we're aware, there isn't a plan B, a fixed or strict plan B, agreed plan B for what happens if they go down. And so
they'd have to get back, they would have to get back around the table.
Then. Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it strikes me from time to time as slightly peculiar that that wasn't negotiated in advance. And I think it maybe lends itself to making you think that none of them expected this and none of them anticipated that when it came to the point of actually selling the club or buying the club, that there might be the possibility that they were back in the EFL. What I think I've said before, and I still think this, is that even if Radrizzani holds on, I don't see 49ers Enterprises exiting because they've got a really big stake and they would need somebody to pay a lot of money to take that. I think the interest in running the club and the interest in future ownership is very much still there. But obviously relegation would delay, mothball certain things, stadium development being one of them. I just don't see any way in which that would proceed in the short term. If they were back in the EFL, I think it would have to wait for promotion. But then even beyond that, you know, you were asking me about Bielsa returning, Bielsa's head coach. There's no director of football at the moment. There is no head coach beyond Allardyce for these four games. If Leeds get relegated, there'll be players, there are players who have relegation release clauses in their contracts, which means that if clubs meet a certain valuation, they can sign them. You know, they have the right to take them on. There'll be major wage reductions if Leeds go down. There are players with, you know, contracts which will see their wages fall by 50-60%, which has to be done, you know, because you cannot carry the same level of wage bill in Championship as you do in the Premier League. So there will, you know, you talk a lot about churn. I don't even think churn is the right word to use, because it's going to be a lot more high octane than that, isn't it? But one way or the other, it's a really, really busy, important summer coming up.
There has to be a certain amount of churn, even if we do stay up there, no?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Because it feels like we can't carry on a similar trajectory to the one that we've been on this season. I mean, Angus Kinnear's words were aggressive trajectory, I think, in the programme notes, just not in the direction that we thought.
Yes, yeah, it certainly has been aggressive. But yeah, downwards rather than upwards. I mean, you mentioned last week when we were discussing the structure at Leeds, how it might change or what it might look like, whether we might shift from a pure director of football model to perhaps something slightly more fragmented where you possibly have a head of recruitment and the sporting director, you know, more bodies, more
like a people. Committee, maybe.
Yeah, I guess so. Something a bit broader than what we've had under Victor Orta. And again, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see how that starts to develop and what happens on that front. I think it's probably inevitable that there'll be links to Stuart Webber down at Norwich, who's been director of football there for a long time. And I know it's been up and down with Norwich. They've obviously yo-yoed a fair amount. But I get the impression that he's done some really good work there over the period he's been involved. A massive Leeds fan as well, as it happens, Webber. So I think these names will come around. I see constantly mentioned, you know, the job that Phil Giles does at Brentford, who are a club a little like Brighton at the moment, who just seem to be very good at getting things right, particularly on the recruitment front. But that'll be a major, major call, because that sort of sets the tone for what comes next. And that sets the tone for, I guess, in the way that Newcastle have done Eddie Howe and Dan Ashworth, it sets the tone for what sort of club you're going to be and what your ideas are going to be tomorrow, but then further down the line as well. Critical decisions, you need the right people making these. You need them to work. And again, you know, which order do you do it in? If you're going to get a director of football or a new sporting director, do you do them before your head coach? Do you do your head coach before you do them? It would seem to me that you would need to know who your sporting director was going to be before you appointed a head coach, because you need to know that to a certain degree they can work together and that your sporting director would be on board with it. But none of this stuff's necessarily particularly quick to sort out. You know, it's all quite complicated. It's all very high level. So you would love to think that in the background there'll be ideas about where they're going to go with this. But given the way it's kind of fallen apart and given the mess that's sort of developed, you really do wonder how well the ducks are in a row at the moment. And I think, you know, bottom line here, it would be useful to hear from some of the main protagonists involved. You know, Radrizzani, people on the 49ers side. Where is this going?
Do you think there's scope for Radrizzani to retain a stake, but 49ers to take control? Because Radrizzani obviously wants his money out of this because he's had a sniff of the big cash of the Premier League, and he'll be thinking, well, if I sell in the Championship, it's going to be at a much reduced rate. So maybe it flips over so the 49ers don't take 100%, but they go above 50, so they can say, right, well, we are now running it. You become the minority party, and a minority party is very much on the way out, as opposed to them who've always been on the way to owning it, it's felt like, for quite a long time. And that's a way of, I don't know, establishing some control at the top, because it feels like it's vitally important to appoint a Victor Orta replacement, but you don't want Kinnear and Radrizzani doing it if then in a month's time we have a different owner, do you? So it needs some direction from the top, and it all needs to start filtering down.
I definitely think that's an option. It's something they might suggest, that they do shift beyond 50%, Radrizzani drops below 50%, and you move into a position which I think Leeds would have benefited from being in a while back, really, which is that your outgoing owner, they've been in a position for a while now where the person who is still calling the shots and running the club and has most control is the person who is in the process, so it looks, of selling to the group who actually want to become the owner and want to have more control. And there has been this feeling this season of, would the 49ers or 49ers Enterprises be doing things differently if it was them in charge? And I think in some respects, the answer is definitely yes. But for as long as they're stuck on 44%, it's not their club. You know, they don't have majority control. So I suppose what I'm saying is, I can't really see from 49ers Enterprises' perspective what the value is to them of moving into another season where they've just about got majority control, but actually they don't. So when it comes to the key decisions, it's not their place to shout the odds or to wholly call the shots. Put it this way, if we go into next season with Radrizzani still as majority shareholder, 49ers still on 44%, I think everybody would be fairly confused about what the point of this was.
Well, as a supplementary point to that, does Andrea Radrizzani have the appetite to do this again? Driven by the money, as Michael mentioned, perhaps, but from a sporting and a challenge perspective, you know, does he have it in him to put in a new director of football? Because really, you know, that it's not a long-term thing for him now, is it? At best, he hangs on another year, maybe two at a push, and also, then sells up. So,
and also, where's the fulfilment when you're at it as a, you know, a sporting club? The performance levels have dropped to this extent. So you're producing very few results. There's very little satisfaction on the terraces. It's going in nothing like the direction you wanted it to go. And you also see the value of your asset financially depreciating as well. I would be surprised if he had vast energy for many more years of chairmanship at Leeds. But there is the issue of the money, isn't there? And Radrizzani is a businessman worth as much as he is worth. And he will want to maximise what he takes out of this. And I guess for anybody, human nature says that if you have something that's worth £500 million suddenly depreciating to, say, I don't know what Leeds would be worth in the Championship, but let's say £150 million, something like that, there is going to be that part of you that thinks, well, if you can do what Burnley have done, if you can put together a squad that does get you promoted immediately, then you find yourself back in the Premier League and you find yourself again in control of a club who are worth vastly more than they are in the EFL, and therefore from your personal point of view, your lifestyle point of view and everything else, you stand to make far more money than you would have done otherwise. And there must as well be that little bit of your brain that looks at the Championship and sees that, you know, Burnley have won the division at a canter this season, Sheffield United have gone up, you know, haven't been relegated fairly recently. I don't know whether my perception of this is wrong, but it seems like it's almost never been easier for relegated clubs to get promoted from the Championship. And if
I'm going to clip that little section there, Phil. And
yeah,
if we
for when
go
Leeds
down,
finish 16th next season.
No, it'll be 7th. No, it'll be 7th. It's never been easy to get out. And Leeds tumble out of the playoffs on the final day. They've done a Millwall.
So do you kind of say to yourself, take that gamble? Even though, and you know, there is an added aspect to this, which is that the anger and the vitriol on the back of relegation is not going to be pretty. And it's not particularly an environment that anybody would enjoy being in the thick of. But if you think you can turn it around in 12 months and get yourself back into the position you were in previously, then the temptation's going to be there financially.
The history is there as well that shows if things are going all right on the pitch, people kind of overlook ownership stuff. I mean, look at the the mess Bates got us into, the 15-point deduction, the fact we're in League One in the first place, all of that, and yet we're winning games under Simon Grayson. The vibe was actually pretty positive for the most part. It only got toxic towards the end of the season when it started falling apart again.
There was still a lot of frustration, I think, and a lot of dissent about the way the club was being run. But yeah, you're right. Once the results start to go well, it dampens down. It becomes less audible. It's not so much of a problem. I guess there is the alternative, though, isn't there? That you decide to stick around. You try hard to stick it out. You have it in your head that you're going to get promoted, but actually you don't. And then you find that in a 2, 3, 4 years' time, you're meandering back in the EFL and you have a club that needs so much investment that you can't do it. And the scope for selling it at, you know, price tag of £500 million is no longer there or no longer even attainable. So, you know, it's definitely a really delicate decision. But I think the realisation that everybody will have is that clubs in the Premier League just seem to be getting more and more valuable. There seems to be more and more money to be made at this level if you sell a club that look at like they're in pretty good nick or have good potential. So I guess if anybody's thinking that Radrizzani will just automatically say, right, you know what, I've had enough and I'm out, then that seems fairly implausible to me. But it's not to say that they couldn't come to some agreement that gives 49ers Enterprises more control.
I mean, the other element of bouncing back is that you look at the Sheffield United situation. Obviously, they've managed to come up in their second year with the parachute payment still there. But had they failed this year, they'd be looking at a catastrophic scenario, wouldn't they, where they'd be having to sell all the players. They've already been talking about how they've not had the heating on and stuff because they can't pay bills there.
So West Brom are in trouble to that extent, aren't they?
Yeah, so it can easily go the other way. If you think, oh, it's all right, we'll come back, but then you don't, your third year is a complete gutting of stuff.
Well, I heard a West Brom fan on Five Live the other day talking about the difference it might make to them if they got promoted. And obviously in the end, they didn't finish top six. So hard to know what lies ahead for them. But because I got into the conversation mid-season and they were kind of talking hypothetically about what might happen, I wasn't sure if it was somebody talking about West Brom or talking about Sheffield United, because it's the same for Sheffield United. It makes a big difference for them coming up. The return of, you know, proper, the parachute payments, obviously, but the return of proper central distribution income, Premier League level, which is so much money. But you're right. I don't think Sheffield United could have kept cracking the whip at this season after season. Eventually, it starts to creep up on you. Eventually, the losses start to have an impact. And it does seem to me that there's a fairly tight window in which, after relegation, you have to turn around and sort it out. And that goes for, that will have gone for Burnley as well. But Burnley have obviously done the trick by absolutely destroying the division, getting themselves up as champions and getting back into the Premier League where they can kind of reassess, rebalance, and they'll be hoping, you know, settle down for a good stretch.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Well, it was do-or-die time some weeks ago, Phil. We've reached ultimate do-or-die time now, Royal Rumble, Battle Royale style. It is points on the board or we sink, and it's Newcastle at lunchtime on Saturday. One good psychological aspect to this is if we were to win, you put yourself then in the box seat with all the other teams to follow you in difficult fixtures. It's just a matter of getting that win on the board, isn't it?
It is. I'm due to go on a Newcastle poddy later today, actually. True Faith, I think it's called. So if you're not bored to tears of listening to this, you can get a bit more of me on there. I have a feeling they're going to be a little nervous about where it's at for them, because they're almost there, aren't they? Almost there, but not quite. So that football fan part of you will be saying, well, there's a chance, seem to indicate that Newcastle are going to finish top four. But if they finish fifth, then, you know, it was inevitable, really, wasn't it? Because it always ends up booting you in the teeth. was saying before we came on air, it's 8 wins from 10 for them, which I just can't visualise watching 8 wins out of 10 games at all. I don't think Leeds have even had 8 wins all season, have they? They've been very good all the way through. Massively, massively consistent. So difficult to beat as well. And even the games that they've lost, it's been Liverpool, it's been Arsenal, it's been Manchester City. The one outlier in that was the chasing they got away at Aston Villa. But it's almost like, the given that they're not the strongest team, they're not the strongest squad in the division, it's almost the perfect balance for Eddie Howe in that they win enough games, but they very, very rarely lose any. So a lot of draws on the board as well. And it's worked nicely for them. And I think reading recently about sponsorship deals that they've got coming, looking at the cash that will be flooding in.
Where from? Any country in particular?
B&M, I think. Mm. They said, yeah, B&M. Yeah, Costco on the shorts. Yeah, that's what it's going to be.
Only connected parties, I'm sure, is what they
they're only going to get stronger. I saw somebody on the Square Ball Walk WhatsApp group saying a week or so ago, it'll all fall apart for Newcastle eventually, and you just thought, nah, it's not gonna. They look quite nicely set.
I was chatting to my next door neighbour but one. I was up a ladder cleaning moss off my roof yesterday. It was funny.
The highlight of the season.
Yeah, well, I'm just doing tasks around the house, around the garden to keep myself occupied. I woke up this morning at 5:40 just thinking about football, and I thought, this is not healthy, which is why I'm just trying, you know, idle hands and all that. He was just saying to me, was my next door neighbour but one, Chris, he was just saying, I'm just glad to not be down there in among it this season, which is funny. It speaks a lot to what being in a relegation battle does to a football fan's mindset, and the fact that they've been relegated fairly recently as well. And yeah. That he was kind of, in that way that you do when you're talking to fans of other clubs who you get on with, you kind of talk down your own chances a little bit. And he was saying they're actually carrying a few injuries, like not Joe Linton's kind of touch and go. St. Maximin's just on the way back. He might feature from the bench. So is there an opportunity here for Leeds? Or do we have to just kind of look beyond that now and just say, well, I just win, you idiots?
I'm in danger of doing a U here.
Come on, do it, Phil.
Shall I?
Embrace it. Come on in, the water's lovely. Come on.
I've always had this game in my head as...
Oh, no.
I know. Shall I just not say it? I don't know. I don't know why.
Everyone knows you're thinking it now, though.
Yeah, I am thinking it. I've been thinking it for a long time. Not that I think Leeds will win this at all, but that it might just nick something from it.
And have we got
and
one in us?
No, by... I don't think this falls into got one in us category. I just... They can't just turn up and cruise, can they? Like, there's pressure on this game for them. There absolutely is. And they might well look at this as... I haven't gone through their fixtures, but they might well look at this as big an opportunity to win in what remains of the fixtures as any, because of the way Leeds have been going. Leeds have got to compete. Leeds have got to stick a foot in. Allardyce, I think, will be really clear. We'll have to see him in a couple of hours, but I think he'll be really clear with the players about the way they've got to go at this. I fully appreciate that you're going to be texting me at 3 p.m. saying, oh well. but I do, in amongst Newcastle, West Ham, Spurs, I think this is the game Leeds are most likely to lose. But I think you can as much make an argument with straw clutching as you do with West Ham being in Europe, Spurs being on the beach, this, that and the other, for why it might just surprise you. But it blooming needs to surprise us. I mean, as I say, you know, to quote my wife, the games don't go on forever.
No. Newcastle's fixtures, obviously we've got them on Saturday. They've got Brighton at home Thursday the 18th. They've got Leicester at home on the following Monday, the 22nd, and then it's Chelsea away to finish the season for them. So they are going to be looking at this game and obviously the Leicester at home fixture for where they're going to pick up their points, you would imagine.
Yeah, but, and actually they do have a game in hand over Liverpool, who are in fifth. So you would think they would get there.
But I do generally sort of lean towards what you've just said there, which is that it wouldn't surprise me if we got something from this. Equally, it wouldn't surprise me if we absolutely capitulated.
Yeah.
Which is kind of where Leeds are.
That's going to, I think everybody, well, I say everybody, I will throw to Michael shortly, but I think...
I think I know which way Norman's leading.
I think that's it. On the one hand, you're thinking, you could maybe just nick a point from this if you hang in, a little bit like they did at St. James's Park.
Don't we have to go for a win, though?
I don't think this is necessary. Yes, in the sense that you can't keep saying let's scrape a point from this forever because that's not going to be enough, but I don't think this is necessarily the game that Leeds have to win. Does that make sense?
Sort of, but listen to your wife.
I feel like we have to, this is a completely stating the obvious, But we absolutely have to try to win it, though. Because I don't think it's a game where you can go, we'll take a point in this one.
Well, the question that follows is then how do we try to win it?
Because I just don't think I particularly fancy Leeds to win this. But I wonder if an afternoon of madness might end in a 2-2 draw or something like that.
What will happen is we will come home exhausted. That's what will happen.
Without a doubt.
It won't just be a routine Leeds find form and suddenly bang in three. It'll be a 1-0 where we're clinging on by our fingernails in the 96th minute, that kind of vibe.
It's all entirely dependent on what happens elsewhere as well, because I think last week we came away with the 2-1 defeat at Man City and everyone went, well, what do you expect? It's not bad. The goal difference hasn't taken a hammering. The confidence shouldn't be too bad after it. It's not like anyone got injured, I don't think. We came through it more or less as unscathed as you can from a trip there. And then Monday happened and everyone went, look at this. This isn't fair, is it?
Enough.
Yeah. It's funny, my neighbour Chris, he was saying they traditionally Newcastle perform quite badly in the early Saturday fixtures too. They haven't won one for a while.
So surely time doesn't make a difference, does it?
Don't you hate these early fixtures?
I do hate
them. It completely takes the...
There's not enough build-up time. There isn't.
You mean drinking?
stroke hard drugs. Yeah. You
don't need them when you're a Leeds fan. You do not need them.
You're into the game, I think, before you've got yourself mentally ready. Tends to be the case. How to win this game? I think the thing that Newcastle will do is press hard. Press high, press hard. I don't know if people will have watched the game against Arsenal last weekend. I thought they were quite unlucky to lose that, actually. I didn't think... People had it down as one of Arsenal's best performances of the season, but I thought Newcastle could easily have taken something from that. They do press really high and press really aggressively, and obviously Arsenal's quality meant that they were able to pass through Newcastle and get around it. Another way of getting around it.
Will they launch
the catapult, and yeah. I don't think...
launch the catapult.
I don't think Allardyce will be necessary. I may ask him this later, really. It will necessarily be shy in saying to them, if you need to go long, you need to go long. But if they go long, and if they, you know, if they do try to do that and gaps appear, like the gap that was between the midfield and Bamford at City, that's got to work far better, because it was a real ordeal for Bamford trying to hold the ball up in those circumstances. I don't think it was all on him at all, but he wasn't really able to do that, and it didn't take a lot of pressure off.
How do we avoid that then? Is there a way to do that, or are we getting into tactics and that's a scary area for us?
Well, I guess one of the decisions for Allardyce is, does he stick with Bamford up top? If he isn't going to say shift to two up front, if it's going to be a lone striker, does he go for Bamford? Does he go for Rodrigo? I wouldn't have said holding the ball up is necessarily Rodrigo's inherent strength either, but the one thing about Rodrigo, as we saw at City, is that he is finishing this season. He is taking chances. And if you need points, if you need wins, then that's got to come into the playbook at some point. I feel like Rodrigo has to start. I think he has to start. I don't know quite how you get him into the team unless you do just say to him, you're playing up front, you need to graft and you need to make it happen in a way that it just didn't happen for Bamford. But I feel a bit sorry for Bamford at the moment. I saw his exit from Twitter earlier this week, which kind of speaks for itself. You don't need to explain why he's done that.
Well, people might not have seen it. There was a video, wasn't there, posting of all his misses.
Yeah, and, you know, needless to say that if you're at a club for 5-6 years, be a fair number of misses that you can dig up and compile together. I won't remember Bamford as a deadly finisher. You know, he does miss chances. He does miss some good chances. But two things with him. The first is that when I look back on him at Leeds, I think I'll think mostly about his role in that Bielsa team in the Championship. But I also think that his reputation, to an extent, and, you know, him as a bloke, I think he's been collateral damage of Leeds' inability to move forward from where they were back then. And the fact that even now, after two seasons where Bamford has not been fit enough and hasn't been able to play much, and on that basis has not been able to get into top form, even now there is still that reliance on Bamford, on Ayling, on others. You know, they're not in a position where, like, Bamford isn't in a position where he can say, you know, the pressure's off me slightly because we have this array of forwards who are all scoring or who are all playing well. So, you know, I can get myself fit. He's trying to make something of a game like that at City where, okay, the levels of possession Leeds had were to some extent down to the fact that he was struggling so much to hold the ball up, but they'd have had very little possession anyway, which meant there was not a lot he could do with it. And I think, you know, you were talking about churn and the need to move on at some stage. I think that's going to be more important this summer than it ever has been previously. But I do sympathise really with where he's at. I think the last 2 years will have been incredibly difficult. And I don't think it's his fault that after two seasons in which he's been on and off fit and missed a lot of games, that there still is this massive weight of pressure on him.
I suspect he will start against Newcastle. I know you
Bamford.
Think, yeah.
Oh, no, I'm not saying I think Rodrigo will start against Newcastle. I think he should.
I have a feeling
he'll go Bamford.
I think we'll be set up to try and keep it as tight as possible for an hour, 65 minutes, and then he'll unleash Rodrigo later on, maybe for when some gaps start to appear, people start to tire.
Maybe.
He'll swap him over later on.
Maybe.
And then it'll be 1-0 either way.
Okay.
Do you think he'll tweak anything in the midfield?
Can he?
You can drop one of Rocker, Forshaw or McKenny. Rather than going through the three standard midfielders, you could put Chuck Aronson in there and go a bit, push someone further forward.
Or
Rodrigo playing. I know we've seen him there a lot of times and it's not really worked, but whether or not you stick him in behind Bamford or something.
He certainly gave the impression after City that a three-man midfield is what he wants, and he definitely nailed his colours to Forshaw's mast in that respect. I think if Forshaw is fit to go through 90 or most of the game again this weekend, then he'll start. Beyond McKenny and Rocker, if you are wanting a midfield three, you are starting to reach a guess towards JB or, like you say, Aronson, but in no way is Aronson a centre mid. You know, you couldn't define him as that at all. So in terms of changes, I'm not sure it'll necessarily be vast or sweeping this weekend. I wonder if Robin Koch will come back in though. He, from what we were told, he'd missed bits of training leading up to City, which was while he was on the bench, but he probably has been Leeds' best centre back for what it's worth this season, and I think if he's available you'd probably play him.
And then Verba pushes to left back?
Possibly, yes.
On the central midfield, Phil, some little whispers starting to emerge of Tyler Adams maybe being fit for Spurs. That'd be a welcome boost for the final day, if it indeed we are still alive at that point.
I will ask about that later on. When we did the story about him having surgery on his hamstring, the point was made that it wasn't necessarily season-ending, although clearly if you only play one game before the end of it, it's not far off either, and he has been missed. So yeah, I think if he was back for that, you just have to hope that there was something still riding on it by that point. But would not be a bad thing at all. I think one way or the other, he'll be pretty close. It'll be round about that point. But I'll put that to Allardyce and see what he says.
I feel like it was this point last year where we were kind of preying on the fitness of Calvin Phillips to keep us up.
Yes. That seems like a long time ago now as well. And Rafinha to just do Rafinha things constantly and dig them out of it. But little things like that can make a really big difference in these circumstances, because it does all tend to be very fine margins.
Yeah, just going back to that game in January last year, the previous meeting against Newcastle, out injured for that game, missing. Forshaw, Cresswell, Shackleton, Firpo, Phillips, Cooper, Bamford and Greenwood.
Blimey. You see, I think if you had a midfield that had Adams and Forshaw in it, automatically there's a lot more bite and a lot more resistance there, I think, than the current three that Allardyce has at the moment. And the thing about Forshaw is that whereas with Adams, he's not particularly a ball player, you know, he's not somebody who sprays it around, not somebody with a particularly vast passing range. Forshaw isn't either, but I think he's better at dictating the play and better at getting on the ball and making things happen. So they, you know, potentially be a reasonable pairing. But as you say, you know, Spurs still two games down the line. I think even if Adams is back for that, I don't know what sort of level his match fitness would be at. But yeah, we'll see what Allardyce says. I would imagine for the next two games, probably unlikely.
Well, we'll get together on Monday, you and I, Phil, for the Phil Hay Monday Club over on the Square Ball feed to do our 15-minute assessment of what happens against Newcastle. One thing's for sure, it's not going to be boring, is it?
No, it definitely isn't. Definitely isn't. Eyes elsewhere as well. Have to be.
TheAthletic.com/LeedsPod to sign up for The Athletic, and we'll speak to you Monday. The Phil Hay Show.